I have always believed in miracles.
And that is why you will never hear me mention his name.
Deliver Brexit. Unite the country.
We will make America great again.
Views on News with Mark Latham.
Good afternoon, Mark Latham from Adelaide today.
Yeah, g'day, Brent. Good to be with you.
And good to be with you. I was just listening to your intro there, and we've got Make America Great Again. And, of course, this week we've had everyone on hashtag about with Make Australia Crate Again with the milk crate with what happened in Sydney. And I see that we've got a little bit of Jacinda Ardern in there, and she's been in the news as well today. A couple of topics we're going to be talking about. But tell us, why are you in Adelaide, Mark, today?
Well, one of the funny things about the New South Wales government and economic management is we've banned the uranium industry. And I'm in South Australia to look at uranium mines that are flourishing here. South Australia's got no such ban, and they're part of a multi-billion dollar industry, and they've enjoyed jobs and investment and economic prosperity from uranium mining. So we've got a committee that's looking at lifting the ban, because I've got a private member's bill in the upper house, and especially in western New South Wales, where due to the impact of the drought, we need job replacement strategies. We need new investment and employment opportunities in western New South Wales. We know the uranium is in the ground, so let's be part of a safe, prosperous and growing industry.
When I thought that uranium mining was banned in Australia, shows how much I know. So it's just in New South Wales that there's a ban on uranium mining. Are there other states in Australia that had that banned as well?
There may be. I think it's banned in Victoria and Queensland.
Right.
But certainly South Australia has three or four mines. The Olympic Dam employs Olympic Dam mine employs 4,000 people. It's enormous. And the one I looked at yesterday, Beverley Mine, in the eastern part of South Australia, employs 200 people. So these are big employers. WA has a new uranium mine just approved, so they don't have a ban either. So certainly South Australia and Western Australia don't have the ban on uranium mining, and I'm wanting New South Wales to join that club.
And from all reports, Mark, we supply overseas some of the highest quality uranium in the world. Is that true?
Yeah, we're the third biggest uranium exporter in the world, behind Kazakhstan and Canada. And it is an important export industry, an earner for Australia. So why does South Australia get the benefits just on the other side of our border? New South Wales should be part of that. For sure and certain, it's in the ground. And I don't see why it can't be mined, particularly looking at some of the new technologies. The Beverley mine we looked at yesterday is a pipe extraction mine. So there's no open cut. There's no shafts that go under the ground. It's all like sucking it out of the ground, as you might do with gas and petroleum.
Right.
So it's environmentally sound, and when they finish that aspect of the mining or the extraction, it's very easy to remediate the land. So, you know, all of this is safe, it's proven, it's an employer. Why is the New South Wales part of it?
Mark, can you see the day when we as a country, move forward with, nuclear power plants?
Well, that's the other part of our inquiry. The committee's looking at lifting the ban on nuclear. I think that's important because the people who want to close down coal-fired power, that's eliminating base load at an alarming rate. And to keep the lights on, to keep the economy growing, you need a replacement for that. So logically, in the longer term, if you're not going to have coal-fired power, and we certainly want to keep that going in the Hunter Valley, then you need a replacement, and nuclear makes a lot of sense. You know, other countries have got no prohibitions like Australia. It said that China is going to construct an extra 250 nuclear power stations in coming decades. I mean, that's just enormous, and that's obviously where Australia could be exporting uranium. But to keep the lights on and have employment growth in the energy sector, nuclear power makes a lot of sense. And the other big development, of course, is that the safety has improved so much. Everyone knows about Chernobyl in the 1970s, but all that technology is redundant now. It's very safe, and they've developed reactors where they're self-closing down. There's no human involvement. If there's any problem, they close down automatically, and they're 100% safe. And the exclusion zone is just the boundary fence for the site.
Right.
So this technology is improved out of sight, led by the United States, and again, Australia should be part of that.
Are there any emissions from these power stations, nuclear power stations?
No. They're carbon-free. and they are a logical solution to climate change. China's building 250 nuclear power stations as a response to pollution and its concern about climate change. And, you know, you look at the atmosphere in Beijing and Shanghai, it is dreadful. Mm. And they've worked out that to power up their growing economy, nuclear makes a lot of sense. So if it's good enough for the Chinese, also the Indians, why aren't people left of centre, the Greens, in Australia embracing nuclear power as a logical response to climate change? The former state Labor leader, Bob Carr, has made that point, saying if you're really serious about climate change, you've got to go nuclear. I say we should go nuclear because we're serious about keeping the lights on, having baseload power, on top of which you can have your renewables.
The Greens only have 10% of the vote share, but they seem to wield a lot of power when it comes to discussions on nuclear power.
Well, they wield a scare campaign. You see, they're trying to convince people that it's like Chernobyl and that these facilities are inherently unsafe. That's not true. The technology's improved out of sight, and it's a matter of having a rational debate. You know, in New South Wales, if coal-fired power stations are closed down, are we really saying in the future we'll power up our industrial economy, facilities like Tomago in the Hunter Valley, with a system that relies on a little bit of hydro, a hell of a lot of renewables, and gas peaking plants on top of that? Well, you know, no energy expert will tell you that that's viable. You need baseload power that's there 24/7, and it's got to come from coal or nuclear. If the government policy continues down the path of eliminating coal, we've got to go nuclear, otherwise the lights go out.
In the same vein and same theme of this discussion, I see that Scott Morrison has vowed to shy away from the tough conversations with Australia's regional family, as in New Zealand. Jacinda Ardern has warned Scott Morrison and his government they'll have to answer to the Pacific on climate change.
Well, the Prime Minister of New Zealand doesn't determine who Australia answers to. Australia does. And I think she's getting past her remit here and probably needs to pull her head in a bit and just stick to matters in New Zealand. I don't think Ardern's at the point where she's the regional policewoman deciding what other countries need to do. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be advisable for her to pull back with that sort of comment. It won't build very good relations with Australia. And the truth is, the Morrison government's just announced $500 million to assist Pacific Islands with climate change. I don't think that money's well spent. I think we've got bigger priorities and spend the money at home. And the other problem with that allocation of $500 million is it really about climate change, or is it trying to buy influence to stop the rise of China in the Pacific? So, you know, it's a complicated area, but the last thing we need is the New Zealand Prime Minister presuming that she can tell Australia how to run its affairs.
But the Prime Minister Tuvalu has come out today, and he's not happy about this $500 million climate change in any way.
What, he wants more or less?
Well, he's questioning, you know, you can't buy us off, basically.
Well, that's good. I hope he says the same to the Chinese. That's a good development. But, you know, the reality in the Pacific Islands, we were told 20 years ago that they were sinking, that the sea levels were rising. There's little scientific evidence to that effect. These islands and atolls are not disappearing. And anyway, giving, you know, a big amount of money to a country like Tuvalu is hardly going to change the world's climate patterns. I mean, that's just farcical. So, you know, the money's better spent at home. And if it is a payment to Tuvalu because of trying to buy them off because of China, well, we should say that up front. I don't think climate change should be a proxy in the argument about Chinese influence in the Pacific. So, you know, there's some sort of shadow punching going on here. It's not fair dinkum policy, and it's a bit of a mess.
He's accepted the $500 million. It says here, okay. Yeah, while he accepted Australia's $500 million package, he said it was a good gesture. That's what he said.
Okay? Yeah. Well, I suppose he would say that.
The Prime Minister said it did not give... This is the Prime Minister of Tuvalu, who said it did not give anyone the right to not do things such as cut emissions back in their home countries or stop coal mining. So they want us now to stop coal mining in Australia. That's what he wants us to do.
Okay, so he's taking our money but telling us what to do.
Yes, that's what he's trying to do.
This whole Pacific deal doesn't seem like it's a very good deal for Australia. And I think Scott Morrison needs to tell Jacinda Ardern to mind her own business and stick to her own country and not say that Australia has to answer to the Pacific. And I think this bloke in Tuvalu sounds a bit ungrateful to take the money and then tell us how to run our energy policy. I mean, the Morrison government's done some things that, you know, are reasonable in this area. I think there's other problems, mainly the ban on nuclear. But the last thing we want as a nation is to be bossed around by islands in the Pacific.
I think the this morning it was something like in the last 10 or so years that New Zealand have increased their carbon emissions by 10.8%. And Australia has for 1.2 or 1.5%. So maybe she better get her own backyard tidy first.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. You know, you normally find when people are shooting their mouth off internationally, their own home base is not real flash on that particular issue, and I'm sure that is the case in New Zealand. So, you know, I think it's a chance for Scott Morrison to stand up and say that while we want to be friends with these nations, Australia has its own agenda and will pursue that. And if they think that hectoring and lecturing us about matters can change Australian policy, they should think again.
Mark, I've got written here while Gladys is away, the MPs will play, but they're not playing very. They're not playing very, very happy. I believe she's had to call back home and ask them to. Could the kids please make up? This is in reference to the abortion bill. Mark, why was this important bill rushed through the lower house as quickly as it was?
Well, Brent, you can only say arrogance. The arrogance of not telling people about it before the election. The arrogance of a group of left-wing MPs getting together, sponsoring this bill and convincing the Premier to allocate immediate time in the lower house for debate, which is now concluded. It goes to the upper house next week. But you've got to ask the question, when will the government learn? Every time they try to rush something through, it ends in political and policy disaster. The closure of the greyhound industry, council amalgamations, the lockout laws that affect Sydney and also Newcastle, everything that's rushed through. And it's not hard to understand this. You know, a school kid would understand. If you rush something through, it probably won't be your best bit of work. And again, the Berejiklian government, thinking it had the numbers in this area, rushing something through with all unintended consequences about gender selection, abortion, abortion mistakes where the baby is born alive and then is allowed to perish on the hospital trolley. These are barbaric things to think about. But if you don't examine them properly and have a decent committee review, then you end up with faulty legislation, and that's where we're at today.
I see that she's urging the Upper House colleagues, this is in the Sydney Morning Herald, Mark, she's urging the Upper House colleagues to consider amending the abortion bill to ban gender selection as she scrambles to quell anger from Conservative MPs.
Well, she should listen to her own ministry, because the Attorney General, the first law officer in New South Wales, Mark Speakman, said a bill of this legal complexity can't be determined properly in less than a month of committee inquiry, and instead there's a five-day upper house inquiry that's underway as we speak. So that's inadequate. The Attorney General said have an extensive, at least a month-long committee review of the legislation. The Police Minister David Elliott called the handling of the bill maladministration, and Senior Minister Anthony Roberts said it's the worst bill ever to come before the Parliament, and the government whip, Liberal Party whip in the upper house, Natasha McLaren-Jones, who's a very good person, said the committee process is way too short. So Gladys has only got to listen to her own people to know she's messed this up. And part of effective leadership is to confess when it happens, I've made a big mistake and I'm going to correct that mistake. The bill should be set aside for a proper joint house review over several months to get it right. I mean, it's so sensitive, so divisive. Do it once and do it properly.
Yeah. A lot of people agree with you. Let's just finally talk about what happened in Sydney this week on Tuesday. A humble milk crate is being hailed as a hero, basically. A humble milk crate being used as a weapon to subdue this bloke wielding the knife in the middle of Sydney. It's gone viral across the internet, Mark. And today there's all the stories about the heroes that, took on this bloke with the knife. They've done a wonderful job, and it just shows what heroes we do have in Australia.
Yeah, it spawned a thousand memes out there in social media land, but most importantly, you've got to think of the mindset of those two guys up in their office who are watching this out of the window on the street, and how easy it would have been just to think, oh, well, I'm staying in my office and, you know, getting back to my desk. Instead, they raced out there, swashbuckling heroes, to play a role in subduing this bloke with chairs and the milk crate. And, I mean, that level of heroism in Australia really needs to be noted, because I've got to say, Brent, in other areas you hear a lot of talk about so-called toxic masculinity, that blokes are, you know, doing the wrong thing with domestic violence and the like. The average instinct of the average Australian male is to be protective, to stand in the way of someone trying to cause harm and protect women in particular. So it's a reminder that, you know, most blokes are doing the right thing. These guys in particular are amazing heroes, and we should put all these things in perspective and remember the milk crate guys, because I think they're much more indicative of what a good Australian man is.
Yeah, I agree. The John Bamford, he was interviewed on TV this morning. He's the 64-year-old lawyer. He's now become the chairman. He's the guy that held the bloke down with the chair. He said he had no option but to intervene on Tuesday when he saw this bloke wielding the knife. He said, I was walking to have lunch on a little cafe, and as I went past the hotel, he said, I saw what was emerging, and I had no other option. I just didn't think about it. It was instinct.
Yeah, great stuff. And, you know, you're sort of like a line tamer with the chair.
He was, wasn't
trying
he?
To distract the knife, the culprit's attention away. So, you know, those acts of heroism are amazing. The human instinct, he says that's instinctive to be protective and step in and be a hero. It's fantastic, because obviously there's another human instinct to protect yourself and avoid, not take the risk. So that these guys stepped up is a great Australian story, and we should long remember it, because I think it is indicative of the Australian character. And while there's a tragedy involved out of this particular event, the upside is to honour the heroism of these guys.
Well said. You always put it so well. Thanks, Mark, for your time. We really appreciate you joining us this afternoon, even though you're over in Adelaide as a busy person. We'll catch up with you next week. Safe trip home, Mark.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks, Brent.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Latham, he is the New South Wales leader of One Nation in the Upper House, and we enjoy having our chat with him. If you want to have a listen again to the podcast, you can do so. Dave will have it up this afternoon on the local 2HD website. So that's 2hd.com.au.